Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, it's time for a Tischler Tuesday and not my beat. He was there in Dallas and apparently had one hell of a time getting home. Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, with us. Mitchell, I heard flight cancellation, New York drive.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a nightmare. Thanks to American Airlines for canceling my Sunday night flight that would have gotten me back to D.C. before a single flake of snow hit the ground. Unfortunately, they decided to cancel that flight, and the ripple effect had me stuck in New York City last night, renting a car and making a 3-4 hour drive through the snow and ice and all the fun to get back home. Also, I could be here ready to join you, listening to some Avicii and Air Horns, getting ready for some football, playoff football.
Well, I mean, I'd hope that at least the end part is good. I'm not going to say worth it. I mean, we could have taken your call from anywhere, Mitchell, and I would have rather you just been home nice, safe, sound, and rested. That sucks. Anthony had a similar experience, actually, almost on Sunday. He had a flight from Indy where he was watching Zaire and friends for the last game of the regular season, a ticket that he got long ago thinking that game could mean something. Whoops. And then his flight got canceled, and then he had to get on another flight. And I don't get why the airlines get to make that call. I'm like, why could Anthony have gotten on one flight on one airline but not another? Why isn't it the airport that's making that call? Being like, no, these planes are done. Other than that, airlines, get your planes off. What are we doing?
Yeah, it was ugly. Apparently, DCA was closed pretty much all day yesterday, which the airline certainly knew when they kept telling me that the flights were going to take off. But all's well that ends well. I made it home, and the Commanders have a win going into the playoffs. Get a little bit of momentum from Terry McLaurin.
No doubt about it. And also, the brand is strong, Mitchell, which is nice. As we said that you were coming on in the YouTube chat, we have someone who just left a lot of potato emojis. So, holy potatoes. Let's talk some football.
Holy potatoes indeed. I mean, listen, this beginning of the season, 12 wins, but, six seed in the playoffs. No one would have expected any of that.
No.
It's been a crazy season with this team winning games every which way. And I'm so excited about what this thing's going to look like this weekend and hopefully the next couple of weekends.
For sure. And we're going to get into all that in a second. I do want to go back, since you were in Dallas and in the locker room and doing all the postgame stuff on Sunday night. Obviously, it was kind of a wacky day with Daniels getting sat at halftime. Dan Quinn gives us the leg soreness story. I don't think it really holds up as told, although I don't really have a problem with what I'm pretty sure the real version is, which is, yeah, it was week 18 and nobody cares if you pull your quarterback when you've already clinched the playoff spot in week 18. If there's any inkling that something could be wrong, and go ahead, get Marcus those snaps. Like, fine. I just thought it was funny that Dan was like, yeah, if it was week 12, I would have done the same thing. Where Jaden is like, yeah, if it wasn't that situation, they would have had to drag me off the field. What was it like in the locker room, like, and in the press conference room, kind of sorting through all that on Sunday night?
Yeah, it was interesting. My only issue with kind of the way that they went about this last Sunday was clearly Jaden was in the game, but they clearly didn't put together a big time game plan. It was a pretty basic set of offensive plays, almost like what you would do in a preseason game with him. Right away, you know that there's an issue when Biadasz is unable to go and Micah Parsons is going right up the middle and getting after the quarterback. And at that point, if you're not gonna go in there and really play to try and win the game, which obviously would have secured the sixth spot and everything, everything ended up well. So it's great that happened. But they kind of dipped their toe in the water. They didn't, this team, which is this coaching staff, which has been preaching consistency and wanting to go for it and be aggressive and winning time moments and all these different things. And then we got to week 18 and it was kind of you know, half a preseason game and half a regular season game.
A half-baked potato, if you will, Mitchell.
What's that?
A half-baked potato, if you will.
If you will. If you didn't want Jaden to get hurt, you shouldn't have played him, and you should have just gone with Mariota. And quite frankly, with the team the Cowboys were trotting out there, there was always a chance that Mariota was going to be enough to win the game himself. And ultimately, when he came in, that's what happened. So that was my only kind of real beef with the way that they handled this. I didn't like it once all the offensive linemen were out and injured, and you know, then you're kind of just trying to get Jaden some snaps, which you know I don't know that at this point in the season he needs.
Right. And, you know, then it's kind of they're doing it for Jaden, but then Frankie goes out, he comes back in, you know, Coleman goes out, comes back in, goes back out again. So it just seemed a little inconsistent. But ultimately, like, yeah, the franchise quarterback that is your most important player, let's make sure he doesn't get hurt in a Week 18 game. That's not meaningless, but it's not as meaningful as having him healthy in the playoffs. I have no problem with it. It was just the messaging was weird. So I was curious if there's anything more from being in the locker room on Sunday night. Obviously, one of the great things that has happened this season that you, I'm sure, got to talk to this guy about and talk to a bunch of other folks about is Terry setting the touchdown record. The way it goes down, being a game winner, just feels so appropriate for this season. What was the vibe like around Terry in the locker room? And for a guy that we've all gotten to know since he got here, to have this turnaround and for it to end with that history, what did it mean to him and what did it mean to his teammates?
Yeah, I mean, there was a ton of excitement for Terry and about Terry, not just the fact that it was, you know, the game when he played, which obviously almost makes it, you know, that much more, but for a guy who's as well-respected in that locker room as anybody else that walks through those doors, to go out and to be able to, for them to be able to get him, you know, get him that record, get him that status, meant so much to everybody. And, you know, as you look at what the Bucs did with Mike Evans in Week 18, they trotted him back out there at the end of the game and, you know, threw him a, whatever it was, 5-yard pass to make sure that he got over 1,000 yards. Felt kind of cheap because the Bucs were so far ahead in that game. But for Terry to be able to go ahead and do that in an important moment in the game, you know, to secure the win, to secure the sixth playoff spot, was just, you know, was a perfect full circle for everything that this team has been through, for everything that he's been through. And it's awesome to add Marcus Mariota to the list of all the different quarterbacks that have thrown touchdowns to Terry McLaurin in his career, because that guy has been through so much. And to see this offense have as much success as it had this year along with Jaden Daniels, it's great, it's encouraging, and I think it points towards a lot of great things in the future.
At the very least, Terry's going into the Ring of Fame, depending on how the next 3 years go. Like, we could be talking about a guy who's in the mix for the Hall of Fame. I think whenever he goes to whatever the biggest ceremony he's going to have is, Ring of Fame, Ring of Honor, jersey retirement, or Hall of Fame. You know how the Browns fans have the jerseys that have all the quarterbacks on them? I think Terry should get his own version of that to wear to that ceremony. And then he should probably tear it off and just have a Jaden jersey underneath.
Right. I mean, to start off the way that he has with all the different quarterbacks, and I brought up the Mike Evans getting to his 1,000 yards because I think this year was the 10th year in a row that he's gone for 1,000 yards.
11, actually, yeah.
Is it 11? Yeah. Terry's on his own path. He's, you know, younger than Mike Evans, but he's working his way towards those same kind of milestones. And the way that, you know, you hear the national media talk about Mike Evans, particularly like the selflessness department and the way that he, you know, has talked about trying to open up the passing game for other guys in Tampa. I think you talk the exact same way about Terry McLaurin here in D.C. And he's a couple years away from, I think, garnering kind of that big time national attention the way that Mike Evans does. But I think as you look at the progression of Mike's career, despite the fact they got to play with Tom Brady for a couple years, I think there's a lot of similarities that you can draw with Terry. And certainly, as we get into this weekend, I think it's almost poetic that those two are going to be up against each other in the first round of the playoffs.
Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So, Mitchell, we kind of went into this conundrum earlier in the show that there's a lot of stuff that I think we are looking at, and not just we, media or fans, that the Commanders coaching staff is like, yeah, that's not going great right now. Don't love that. And yet they've won 5 in a row. How do you start to make sense. And as you and JP talk about this stuff on the pod, do you find yourself being more pessimistic about the quality of the performances or more optimistic about the fact that they just went undefeated in December and January and now are headed into the playoffs having won five straight games?
Heck no. I mean, yeah, there's certainly plenty of things that you can point to that aren't going great. And, you know, as you look at the run game and the pass defense and corner and the play at corner, all those different things, sure, you want better. But I think this team knows that they need to be better at it, and it's something that they'll address in the offseason. We came into the season knowing that they didn't really have a number two receiver. We came into the season knowing that the secondary DBs were going to be a little bit of an issue. And yet, this team found a way to still come away with 12 wins and do everything that they did. You know, you were looking at a team that's riding a five-game win streak, and it's all because of number five. It's all because of Jaden Daniels. And I think as you look at this playoff structure as we move forward, you're playing the Bucks this week that, you know, you can outscore. You can win a shootout with them. And quite frankly, I think that's how this team is going to have to go about, you know, winning games. It's going to be about ball control. It's going to be about moving the ball down the field. It's going to be about what they're able to do with number five, both in the pocket and as he runs the ball. And, you know, there are a lot of deficiencies on this roster, and we knew that coming in. That's why we the coaching staff and all of us were talking about, you know, this being a rebuilding year. They turned over more than half the roster in the offseason, and yet they still found a way to win. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, the physical ability that Jaden Daniels has. But I think you also have to give the coaching staff and Dan Quinn a ton of credit for getting these guys to buy in and be a team and be one and, you know, play together. And the results on the field aren't always great, but you don't see guys pouting. You don't see guys quitting on their team. You know, I think that's an important thing that particularly when you get to the playoffs, that big famous word that we all love talking about, the culture that DQ has built is pretty dang strong.
So if we take the premise that the main driver of their winning is Jaden, does how he played and the lack of production on Sunday in the first half before he swaps out for Marcus give you any pause going into wildcard weekend?
Absolutely zero. Like I said when we first started, if they were going to go out there with the game plan that they had in that first half with Jaden, I would have rather they just sat him and not even, you know, worried about him taking hits. I think not having Tyler Biadasz out there was a big part of that. I am hopeful and optimistic that he's going to be back at center. But ultimately, you know, what happened on Sunday in what for the starters or for Jaden was essentially a preseason football game for him doesn't particularly concern me. The lack of a running game still concerns me. The lack of ability to get any push on both the offensive or defensive lines certainly concerns me. But Jaden not doing a whole lot in, you know, whatever it was, 24 minutes of football isn't 30 minutes of football isn't the worst thing in the world.
So for whatever it's worth, I agree with you. And I think that the performance on Sunday and watching it back on tape and in 15 minutes here on the show, it's the Hoffman Show, Team 980, always live as well on the Free Odyssey app. Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, is with us for his weekly spot here. But in 15 minutes, we'll have the Jaden Daniels Take Command Tape Tuesday, where we let everybody hear what Logan and I saw when we watched it on tape. And the short version is, Mitchell, like, it actually wasn't that bad from a mental standpoint. He just missed throws, and I don't know why he missed those throws. I don't know how much practice time he got last week. You know, obviously the last 2 weeks, the schedule's been a little funky. Christmas 2 weeks ago, New Year's this week. I don't know if they went more walkthrough. It certainly seemed like the amount of guys they rested on Wednesday, it was not a full practice by any stretch of the imagination. And when earlier in the season, he kind of went through a rut throwing the ball. We chalked it up some to the rib injury, but there was also less practice time because they were in that like whatever three games in 12 days or whatever they had with the Thursday nighter a couple weeks ago, or at this point a month plus ago. So I actually looked at the tape and was like, oh, he'll be fine. Like, they just have to get back on their P's and Q's in practice this week versus what I think it felt like in real time, which was like, something's not right here. Like, he's not seeing it well. Just, it feels clunky. And there was some of that because the O-line was contributing to the clunkiness and the lack of a run game. But when he actually, like, went back to pass outside of a couple of plays, I think he saw it pretty well, got the ball in the direction it was supposed to go, and then it just went off dude's fingertips like 7 or 8 times.
Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't just throws from Jaden that guys couldn't catch, because Diami threw a dime to Ozzie in the end zone that he dropped. But I chalk up a lot of the mistakes to the fact that it was a Week 18 game, as you said. As I keep trying to say, it was almost a preseason game in terms of the way that they dealt with Jaden there. You're right. I didn't think that he made poor decisions. I was a little alarmed by how the offensive line was protecting him. I mean, obviously, Micah Parsons is a all-world pass rusher, but, you know, the fact that he was able to beat Michael Dieter as quickly and as easily as he did on a few occasions is a little concerning as you look at next week, because, you know, Vita Vea is a load in the middle, and if he gets under your pads, you got no chance of slowing him down. So it's going to be a big matchup for Biadasz there in the middle, if he's able to go, and obviously if not, Dieter. But, you know, it was a sloppy game. This team has been quite sloppy early on in games for most of this season. And, you know, it's not a great feeling to not feel confident that this team's going to come out and be ready to go, you know, in the first half or be clicking on all cylinders in the first half. But I think that this Bucs passing defense presents opportunities for the Commanders to move the ball down the field a little bit. And, you know, we saw it in week one when Jaden was able to get loose with his legs to the outside a little bit and was able to hit Eckler for a couple of those nice little passes, and Brian Robinson for a couple of those nice little, you know, quick shots that they were able to take for 20 plus yards. I think that's a part of the game plan that, as we've matriculated through the season, we haven't seen them use the running backs in the passing game as much. Certainly part of that is Austin Eckler, you know, being out with a concussion for the past 4 weeks. I think he's a big part coming back. I think he can be a big difference maker. And there's going to be opportunities for Jaden to find Terry, to find, you know, OZ, to find Jameson down the field a little bit. And I think to win this football game, they're going to have to hit a couple of these longer passes.
Oh yeah, for sure. The explosive plays have to come back, but there was a couple opportunities. I would definitely say everyone should stay tuned for Logan's vantage point, as someone who's in the end zone where Ozzie dropped the ball on the Diami one. Interesting insight from Logan on that one that folks will hear in about 10 minutes. Of course, there is the whole other side of the ball, Mitchell, where Baker Mayfield has thrown for 4,500 yards and 41 touchdowns this year. He's like the 10th guy in NFL history to throw for 40 touchdowns in a season. The other 9 are Hall of Famers. So just an absurd year production-wise for Baker Mayfield against a Commanders defense that definitely missed Quan Martin this weekend, definitely missed Marshawn Lattimore this weekend, is hoping to get those two back. Quan's was just an illness. We all know Lattimore's got the hamstring. How confident are you that this defense, with those pieces back in place, can step up against a Tampa offense that gave it to them pretty good in week one?
Listen, I'm not going to sit here and say that this team is going to shut down Baker and company. I think a big difference maker was Jalen McMillan in that first game, was wide open, particularly in the first half on 2 or 3 little, you know, kind of wheel routes, rub routes with the other receivers on the outside. And Baker was just a little bit off and missed him. Otherwise, that first half that the Bucs, I think, were up 17-7 at halftime, could have easily been, you know, 24 or 31 if Baker was a little bit more. So, but we've seen this secondary, which, you know, in years past have had issues with the communication stuff. We haven't seen that as much this year. I think the Bucs game, they were still working through some things. And obviously, if Lattimore is able to go, that just creates an entirely different, you know, situation for this team. I mean, we all know about the Lattimore and Mike Evans, you know, incidences that they've had, you know, the fighting and the shoving and the all those different things. They played each other in 13 games. Mike Evans has gone for 34 catches for 567 yards and 3 touchdowns in 13 games, all well below his career average. Lattimore clearly gets in his head. And for Marcus Lattimore, He has a pick. He's got 13 passes deflected when he's covering Evans in those matchups. A fumble, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery. In the playoffs, he had a couple more pass deflections. I mean, this is a guy that can shut down their number one receiver. And I know folks are going to have in their head what happened, you know, against Philly and all the PIs and all those different things. I think this is a little bit of a different situation where it's not just about, you know, the physical play on the field. I think it's also a massive head game. And clearly, whatever started with these two early on in their matchups in the NFC South, it's a thing. I mean, Mike Evans is clearly not the same football player he is versus Marshon Lattimore versus the rest of the NFL. And so it's going to be important that Marshawn's able to get out there. And if he's not, I think, you're going to have to hope that, some bubble gum and tape are able to keep the secondary together and stop Baker from hitting any of those explosive downfield plays.
Yeah, let's tape the flag in the referee's pocket on St. Juice's side of the field. Please no more of that. By the way, in that week one game, how about this for a throwback, Mitchell? I just pulled up the snap counts. In that game, going down the list, Emmanuel Forbes played 34 snaps in that game. Fedarian Mathis played 23 snaps, which was three more than Dante Fowler played in that game. And Jamin Davis also played 13 snaps in that game. So that's how long ago this game was.
I mean, let's be honest. The Bucs are a better team today than they were in week one when the Commanders played them. But the Commanders are far and away a better team than they were when they played the Bucs. This Bucs team is a veteran team. For the most part, the core group has been together. When they were playing in that week one football game, you know, obviously everyone's knocking off the rust that they're knocking off. But, you know, that team that played together, they knew what they were doing. This Commanders coaching staff and this Commanders roster was both trying to figure themselves out. We were seeing players play in different positions. We heard both offensive and defensive coordinators talking about wanting to try and figure out where players played best. And, you know, that was the first time they really got to see these guys with the bright lights on of a regular season football game. So things are a lot different today for Washington than they were in week one. And for Tampa, you know, they're a better team, but it's pretty much the same team we're seeing. So I expect this thing to be a lot closer and to be a really incredible football game.
I totally agree. Can't wait. Sunday night football. It'll be on NBC. Mitchell and JP will be live on the Monumental Sports app after the game for their post-game show, the Beltway Football Podcast. You can also check out all their previews and everything else throughout the rest of the week. Mitch, always appreciate it, and we will talk to you again next Tuesday and hopefully be talking about a Commanders win and a matchup against, I guess it would be probably Detroit.
Hey, listen, we'll see where they're going next week. Could be Philly, could be Detroit. Regardless, I'm excited. I think we're going to come away Sunday watching the Washington Commanders celebrate their first playoff win since, oh, you know when.
A very long time ago. If they do, will you and JP do the post-game show from the pirate ship?
So the last time we were there, we tried to do the show from the pirate ship and were explicitly told that we were not allowed on it.
So, honestly, there's zero part of that is surprising. Not a single thing.
You know that they care so much about that pirate ship down there, and that thing is awesome. And the cannons are hilarious because JT gets scared every year when we're down there and the cannons go off, as well as many other people. But it will be pretty fun. It'll be a pretty fun post-game show, and I imagine there'll be a lot of holy potatoes if they're able to come away with a W.
You know what you have now, though, that you didn't have last time? You got the 2025 DC Sportscaster of the Year, JP Finley. That's what you got this time. Yeah, JP got named. Maybe it's 2024, but JP, Sportscaster of the Year in DC. Congratulations to your co-host. Take that medal, that trophy, whatever. Maybe it's just an email at this point. Show that to the people keeping the pirate ship. Take that, Tampa. Mitchell, thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
I've always known JP as elite. I'm glad the rest of the world does too now.
See you, man. That is Mitch Tischler with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, take command. Tape Tuesday.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment, when you needed to make plays, He just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
The old tale of two halves, Logan. Not just because they switched quarterbacks at halftime, but it really was, from an execution standpoint, two very different teams. But upon further review, upon watching it on tape, like, there were a ton of opportunities in the first half for Jaden Daniels, and he just wasn't able to hit them with the efficiency and the efficacy that he has this year. When you watched this first half offensively, what are some of the things that stood out to you about why they just could not get going?
Yeah, and I really think it just comes down to not only Jaden Daniels, but like a general offensive inefficiency. You know, like if you look at the first play of the game, it's stick, or Patriot is what I would call it. So 5 yard out by the tight end, box fade by number two, and then a hitch by number three. And he is a little, just a touch late to getting the ball out, right? And I think he could throw the stick to Zach, but I think he's reading the outside player. And the DB does a good job of breaking downhill. And so it kind of spooks him a little bit. He pulled, and it was so funny when I watched. So on the sideline, you're kind of like, man, Jane's not seeing it well. This is a tough game. And actually, when I went back and watched it, I was like, he's actually seeing it fine. You know, it's just like he's seeing it fine. And again, like in that situation, you're trying to get the ball to the hitch. You think you read the coverage a certain way. The DB's breaking on the hitch. You get a little bit nervous because it's a long throw. It's from the far hash. Like, so you pull it down. And again, you get a sack. Micah Parsons does a great job. But to me, that was kind of, I think that's the perfect play to like encapsulate his day, so to speak, right? It's the ball. I know where the ball should go. In some cases, I'm throwing the ball where it should go, but I just missed the throw. And I'm not missing it like dramatically. I'm missing it by inches in some cases.
Tons of balls off receivers' hands in this game.
And I think that was the thing. Like, for like in the next drive, for example, it's second and 15. They run this like pass 15 willy. So it's like basically 12 personnel. The tight ends stay in. You get max protection, big play action fake. Terry gets a little bit bogged down on the release. Kind of there's some traffic, but he gets through. And Jaden, I think, to me, like, layers this perfect ball to space. And you're like, wow, what a read, what a throw. And it's just outside the fingertips of Terry McLaurin. And that was the whole day. Like, that was the whole day, right? There was a hitch that was a little high for Terry. There was a comeback that was a little high for Terry. And on the review, I was like, actually, he's the ball is going to the right person. He's pulling it down when he should. It's just, we're not getting these completions that have characterized his success throughout the season. Like, we talk about him being so incredibly efficient, and then all of a sudden the efficiency's down for him and the offense doesn't look as good. And I think that's the problem. And maybe a bigger picture problem heading into the playoffs. And we'll talk about this with the run game in a second. But like, when you don't have something else to go to and you're solely reliant on that quarterback position to be excellent, this is kind of what can happen, right? When we don't have the rushing efficiency, when the pass game's not there and Superman doesn't have his cape on and he's just a normal quarterback for the first half of a game, like, this is the result.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, dead on. I mean, the third drive of the game is like a great example of this as well. And like a little mental mistake added in. Third drive of the game starts with 3:25 to go in the first quarter. They run this play action deep comeback. It's open. He overthrows Terry. Terry jumps up to try to get it. It goes off his hands out of bounds. Second play of that drive, Austin Eckler, it might be his first snap back. It's certainly his first, what should be his rushing attempt. It's a zone read. And it probably is going to be a handoff, and then Austin goes the wrong way. So Jaden, very smartly, is like, well, if the read was that the running back should have gotten the ball, I'm going to go where the running back was supposed to go. And he actually picks up 5 yards on what for most people would be like a minus four. And then on the next play, it's third and five, and he's picking his matchup. They run slants, three of them on the same side of the field, and a 3-by-1, and he misses Terry barely on the slant. And that's a three and out, where you have two good reads and he actually makes a good play on a mental mistake by a teammate, and instead it winds up in three and out. And like, that's in many ways the story of the first half, is just a lot of silly things that happen in the run game mixed with good decisions that are poorly executed in the pass game.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect iteration. I mean, and then you go to the next drive, it's kind of the same thing. His drives were all like that, right? It was like he has a completion on an RPO, which was great. There's a run for no gain. It's second and 10. He takes a sack. And then third and 10, there's kind of a pseudo drop. Again, it would have been a tough catch. But like, that's the drive. So like, you can't Like, in the same way we talk about defense having negative plays and then a couple greens in specific high leverage moments, the offense should look the other way. You got to have a lot of greens and only a couple of reds. On these first drives, I don't know exactly how many it is, but there's the first three plays, there's two reds, there's two sacks, right? The next five plays, there's a holding and an incomplete pass, right? There's two incomplete passes and a mental mistake on the next drive. And then there's a sack and a drop on the third drive. And then there's an incomplete pass and an incomplete pass. And a Jaden scramble is the only positive play. That is the first, that's pretty much the first quarter of the game. So out of how many plays was that, Craig? About 16 plays. I'd say over half of them were what I would call red plays. And that's just not tenable football. And whose fault is that? You know, Jaden Daniels a little inaccurate. They give up a couple quick pressures. There's a holding penalty on Bates, which is a tough block. I get it.
By the way, I'm glad you brought that play up. Is that actually a holding penalty? Because like he, you know, the guy comes at him. John like turns him and winds up like wrestling, moving him to the ground. But like, there's no actual grab. He just blocks him and the dude, like, kind of, and not even wrestling move. It's like a judo move where he uses his momentum against him and kind of chucks him to the ground. I don't know that that's actually a hold, but that's because I don't actually know the finite details of the rule.
Right.
As someone who actually should know that because that was your job, is that actually a hold or does it look like a hold and it got called?
As someone who holds a lot, let me just tell you this real quick. So I think if the back had cut to the right of the block, it would have been fine. Like, you know what I'm saying? If the back had, like, so they're basically running to the left. It's like 12 lead, like old school, like 13 lead. So, like, we're going to base block. You're leading on the linebacker, like old school run. Like, you haven't seen that run in a long time. Anyway, Kendricks does a great job coming downhill. If the back literally just puts his foot in the ground behind the block and cuts off Bates' butt, I don't think it's a hold. I think what they see is a guy bouncing it and then someone on the ground. And so when that happens, like 9 out of 10 times, like you're going to get a holding call. And that's another interesting thing we didn't talk about with the defense. There was a couple times where they had big plays and there was obvious holding calls on the interior that weren't called. And again, that happens every single game. But like, talk about rushing efficiency and their rushing efficiency. Imagine if you had a couple more holding calls thrown in there.
I remember one like where John got held on like a Lance scramble and you're just like, it's right at the point of attack as he's getting out. Why is that not a hold?
And there was another one on Jerzon where he did a great job kind of playing back on a tight zone run. And the guy tackles him to the ground. And again, 9 out of 10
times. I remember
times,
that. Yeah.
Holding call, right? But
we didn't get it. And so, pancake block in the stat sheet, holding call if the referee's
in real
paying
life,
attention.
Yeah. But again, like it's happening in real time. You're bound to miss some stuff. But to me, that was one of those ones where, again, like it's a negative play. It gets you to first and 20. And it's just so hard to overcome that. And that's kind of what it was. And so Jaden's not as efficient as he is passing the football. And again, if you think back to his kind of that doldrum period, I'm trying to remember exactly when that was, kind of Pittsburgh, Philly, where
when he comes back. I mean, it really started with Chicago, where he comes back after the rib injury. So he gets hurt against Carolina, comes back against Chicago. They pull it out, obviously, and you know, no one remembers anything being bad from that game because of the Hail Mary. But then you go Philly, Pittsburgh, Dallas the first time, really until the Tennessee game.
Yeah, and I kind of felt like that. And again, that was where they were practicing a little bit less. He was practicing a little bit less. And I feel like that's kind of what this reminded me of. They're just a little bit off on some throws, and this is the result. And again, the rushing efficiency is not there to sustain it and kind of deleverage him. So it was kind of those things. Again, and it's not like great insight. I don't know, you know, like if you're a fan tuning in, but like that's
hey,
what it is.
The quarterback should have put the ball more in the receiver's hands instead of off the receiver's hands, you know.
And they should have run the ball
offense.
And they should have run the ball.
Here's what I would
better.
Say though. Yeah, like I actually like the way that Cliff called it, and I think there's a ton of opportunities.
I think
and
so too.
I think that's encouraging in a lot of ways. Like there are some guys open and there's a couple of missed reads I think from Jaden or things where at the very least he maybe stays on a receiver a little too long. Like there's one where he's like really staring down Terry and like he's got Ertz open over the middle and you're just like get to Zach, just throw it there.
I think I remember that one. Like and this is just again like one of those kind of fun like football nerdy things is if it's the play that I'm thinking of, like Zach's running like a high cross, right? Is that what he's doing? Do you remember?
I think so. Yeah, I'm trying to find it in the notes, but keep going.
Yeah, and so basically, like, yeah, it looks like it's going to be open, but the backside.
Yeah, 11-19, second quarter. It's 2nd and 9. He wants Terry on an out. 86 is open, and he just never really progresses, and he pulls it down and scrambles into a -1 yard sack.
Yeah, I don't remember that play.
Zach's on the high cross. You're thinking the right one.
But yeah, so I think the so what I was going to say is that, like, you're looking at this and you're like, man, that backside player, he's actually getting enough depth where I don't know if he can make this throw. And that happened a couple times where it's like he's open, but the backside player or the guy's driving on something and you're like, man, like in the moment, I was like, he should have thrown this. But watching the film, I was like, I don't know if he should throw this. And this is actually like a better decision, a more understandable decision than I thought. You know what I'm saying? And it's just,
yeah.
And that was kind of a funny thing coming out of it, because I kind of was like, oh, he wasn't seeing it well. Like, that's why they didn't do it well. I actually thought he saw it fine. It's just, you don't make plays. And that's the thing that is the deciding factor. And I think a great illustration of that is when Marcus comes in, you know, they throw the screen to Diami. They throw that little kind of quick slant to Austin, which kind of plays like a screen. And then he has the run for the first down. But then the next play is a huge completion to OZ, who makes an incredible catch. And it's one that he kind of, I'm not even going to call it a drop, but he had an opportunity, a similar one in the first half that Jaden kind of layered over the defender and he jumped up to catch it, but he drops it. And it's on the sideline kind of after like a little boot action. And so, and that's not even talking about the reverse pass that he kind of flubbed. You know what I'm saying? So,
kind
but he
of
makes
flubbed.
This, but he makes this tremendous catch. And that's, two of them weren't made in the first half. You know what I mean? Right. And that's,
he drops like what should be the easiest touchdown of his life on the Diami could not have placed the ball better. And OZ, for some reason, like, tries to overhand it instead of underhand it. And it's just like,
I will say, I was standing right behind the throw, which is one of the things about being on the sideline, which is like so fun. And that ball, it came out a little wobbly, but it like, I'm not kidding, I've never seen a football do this before. Probably because he's left-handed and he's running to the left. It like hooked. Like hard. Like it almost looked like a punt. So I was like watching it and I was like, and it kind of came out like right. It looked like it was coming right over OZ's head. And at the last second, it like tucks away. So I think he's thinking here. And then at the last second, he's trying to get back to the hands like that. But it was, I would never have seen it. I was literally right behind it. And I was like, that is the craziest looking ball I've ever seen.
That's the insight people come to the podcast for. We're like, I don't know, better throws. And then on what looks like the best throw of the day, it turns out it's coming off like a Tressway left-footed punt.
It came off like that. Maybe because he's running, I don't know why, but like it literally hard hook and he should catch it. I'm not saying he shouldn't catch it, but I remember thinking like that is a tough ball because it's kind of fluttering and then it dives away. So yeah, one of those funny things I would never have seen if I hadn't been on the sideline.
For sure. And like, I don't know what you actually call this or what you would call this in Madden. They call it shock option. Basically, you have three wide receiver side, outside receiver runs like a quick hook, slot receiver is going to run the slot fade. And then, number one is running, the closest guy is running, an option route. So you can stop, you can go out, you can go in.
Right.
But like that outside quick hook, number two running the fade, the slot fade, that's the one that OZ hits, or Marcus hits to OZ.
Right.
Jaden's got one in the first half, route concept where he just underthrows Diami. And like, it's not a bad throw. Diami's gets hands on it, but like it's contested and it's knocked away.
Yeah, really good play by the defender, actually. Yeah.
But like, if Jaden can get that, we're out, where Diami can run under it, like that thing's a touchdown. And like, it's the difference of a yard / the receiver making a hell of a play on one and not being able to make a hell of a play on another. But like that in many ways, I think was the difference, was Marcus operated in the second half with like this great precision on a lot of throws, and guys made a couple of plays that were dropped in the first half, either by Jaden or on a left-footed arm punt by Diami. That was actually a
crazy. But and I think that's a great point, because Terry drops a slant. Like, Terry never drops a slant. And it's a little overthrown. Yeah. It's in a tough spot.
Dude, but then the catches Terry made in the second half, my God.
Incredible. I was just about to talk about that. So like, it's a slant. I think it's on like a third and four.
Yes.
And the ball is down behind him and away. And I've seen that ball
drop.
And
he gets hit while he catches it.
I've seen that ball dropped probably, I don't know, 9 out of 10 times, 19 out of 20 times. And he just makes a tremendous catch. And then there's that long dig that Marcus throws to him where he like dives in front of the receiver, the DB, as he's making the catch. So my point is that
that play was ridiculous. I'm like, how did Terry, like, if that
both
happened,
both of those catches were crazy. Both
if you were the defense in Madden and you had that catch made on you, you would rage quit. You'd be like, yeah, this is BS. I'm starting this game over.
100%. But the reason I bring that up is Terry has, I don't even know if they're drops, but like even on the comeback, like we've seen Terry make that catch where he jumps up and the ball goes between his hands. Like, mm-hmm, that's tough. And then he makes three, if you count the touchdown to win the game, three of the best catches you'll see all season, just straight right, catches, right? And then those plays weren't there in the first half. And so there is a little bit of variance. Could the quarterback be better? But also dudes just went out and were like in baller mode for Marcus Mariota. And Marcus Mariota was in baller mode, but like they were actualized because literally three of the best catches you'll see all season. And Terry just was on one in the second half. And that's why he's one of the best receivers in football. But I guess that's what I'm saying. It's like, even when the quarterback's struggling, earlier this season, there's been times like this where the guys have made plays for him. And here it just didn't fall, which is nobody's fault. And in the second half, you get guys, OZ making a great catch, Terry making three or four great catches, Diami making plays, right? Like they were able to stack stuff. Because the whole offense was kind of playing with more continuity, which is great to see them supporting sure, Marcus like that.
For sure. Okay. The part, I'll try to think of something happy to end on, but while we do that, let's talk about the run game real quick to wrap things up, not to end on a sour note, but the running back run game is not looking good right now. And there's a couple nice carries in the game. I think Austin had a couple. And like the thing that stuck out to me on those carries is he's really decisive. And there's a trust level of like, the play is going to work. I'm going to run hard where I'm supposed to. And I'm going to hit the hole. And it worked out. And sometimes it's like a 7-yard game. We're not talking about 40 yarders, but like you're able to squeeze through a hole in the same way that Deuce Vaughn actually was able to do that. Smaller guys that are just like, I'm just going to squeeze through here and be hard to see. And you get to the third level and your safety comes down and tackles you for 7 yards. Sick. That's a successful run. Take that any day of the week. Where B-Rob, I feel like at times, doesn't quite trust it as much. But what are you seeing in the run game, both from the backs, but I think also, obviously, they're just not getting a ton of movement up front. And so these times where Dallas is getting 4-yard gains that look like no gain, and then you realize the line of scrimmage has been moved 4 yards, Washington's are actually no gains or gains of 2.
Yeah, so again, like stopping the run, running the football is complicated and nuanced, and I say this every week, but it's an important point, right? So on the first carry of the game, I think they mistarget the run, right? Who is it? Dallas brings like a little run stunt. They kind of get bogged up in it. They should be taking the combination, I think, all the way to the front side player in the box. They don't. It's really messy. B-Rob, you know, there's nowhere for him to run, really. There's the holding call that Bates has on one of the second runs of the game. Again, can't make that work. But also, I feel like as much as the blocking surface has their issues, there are times where it's blocked up okay. And B-Rob, like you said, doesn't trust it, where he's trying to like bounce it on a zone read, for example. There's a time where it's like, get downhill, trust that double team is going to get there, and just hit it. And it's not going to be a huge play, but it's 3 or 4 yards as opposed to a net gain of 0. And so instead, he like runs to darkness and gets tackled for 0 yards. So there's one where he screws it up. Then the next play, he trusts it and the double team gets split and he gets tackled for a 0 yard gain. So like everyone, it's not B-Rob, right? It's not the offensive line. It's like they're kind of just not on the same page. And I think that's something that that is going to be interesting to watch, if they can kind of find that continuity. Because we've seen them at moments, like in the Atlanta game, I thought they did a good job getting back to some of the stuff that worked for them. And then I think when you look at like this game, you're kind of like, man, this was like really clunky. This wasn't very good. This combination wasn't good. This line movement really jacked them up and it put them in a bad spot. They ran bounce, where B-Rob ran for like basically, or it was a holding call on somebody, and B-Rob basically ran for like no yards. But because of how they're running it, he's an offset gun, right? They're running to the tight end. It just gets strung out and there's no crease. There's no crease made. Guys aren't winning one-on-ones on the blocking surface. And that's just tough sledding. And so what I would say is, like, much like stopping the run, really good run games are very detailed. Who are we going to? What's our footwork? How are we getting there? And so if those guys can improve, that'll help B-Rob. And then B-Rob, can you approach it with the same level of detail where it's like, hey, I'm going to trust this run to be an A-gap run, and I'm not going to bounce it too early. And that's really hard to do when it's been so clunky over the course of the last couple of weeks. You got to just trust it, though. And if that's my message as the offensive line coach, Anthony Lynn, the running backs coach, I'm just saying, hey, man, it hasn't been super clean all the time, but we can get it clean. And when it's clean, you got to make sure you're hitting the right spot. And I think you saw, like, I like the word you said, trust, right? Austin's really trusting it, and he's running. He ran with confidence, and I felt like B-Rob wasn't always trusting it, and there were times where he wasn't running super confident, and it makes total sense as to why. I think he feels probably a lot of pressure. I would assume, I haven't talked to him, but I would assume there's a lot of pressure to be like, get the running game going, get back to what it was early in the season, and right now it's just, it's not there. And so O-line needs to play better, blocking service in general needs to play better, B-Rob needs to play better, and I think that's just the nature of the inefficiency.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things off of that. One, I think this was a fun, or not a fun, but an informative game to watch on the effect a running back can have, because I think there's a couple of times where Dowdle really presses the front side and then is able to make really smart cutbacks, and he actually, you know, dips a few tackles for loss, so it's even muddy in the backfield, but he pushes long enough that once he slips that one tackle, now he's got a big crease. He's able to get 5-6 yards. There's one where I remember he makes Jalen Holmes miss. There's another where he makes Luvu miss, and like, these are really good cuts, but you press it enough that maybe your offensive lineman can get a piece. And that is enough to avoid the tackle for loss versus slowing your feet, like trying to juke a guy in the backfield. It's like, just press one hard cut and maybe you can get, you know, Dan talks about the art of breaking tackles, and like, you can kind of get on someone's arm instead of in the middle of their body.
Sure.
And that's enough to get out of the backfield unscathed. And then everyone else has done enough that you get 5-6 yards out of it. The other thing that I think is interesting specifically going into the playoffs is, for as bad as the running back run game has been, the quarterback run game has been excellent. And even on some of the design stuff. And typically in the playoffs, we see teams with running quarterbacks not throw caution completely to the wind, but certainly up the dosage of,
sure,
hey, we're going to have Josh Allen run more. We're going to have Lamar Jackson run a little bit more. We're going to be a little more aggressive with some of those calls. And I do wonder if they will run Jaden more in the playoffs, and if that threat slash that potential success can open the running game, the running back run game back up, because teams are really going to be scared of Jaden ripping off 20-yard runs on a regular basis with, you know, John Bates or Ben Sinnott out in front on some arc option type of play.
No, I think that's a great point. I think that's something that it's always a trump card. You know, it's always a trump card. I think I was watching Dallas and they had a run with Trey Lance on the perimeter, and I just was like, there's no good answer here, right? It ended up being like a 10-yard gain, and I think they actually handed it off to the running back. But basically, they brought someone across the formation, Jeremy Chin, or the DB has to match the person coming across. Mm-hmm. Trey Lance boots out. Jeremy Chin kind of plays back, and I'm like, he has to do that because the quarterback's involved in the run game, and then the back hits it up kind of right in that crease. And I just think, I think that's going to be a big part of the offense moving forward. I think when you watch the Atlanta game, like the true playoff kind of feel of that game, like, they ran the quarterback a ton and Jaden ran the ton. And it is the ultimate trump card, because it makes it so hard from a numerical standpoint to play defense effectively. And I do think that's something you'll see a lot more of, and hopefully it loosens up. Some of it just comes down to targets. Like, if you can just clean up some of the targets, like, one of the things about the Dallas run game, which I really appreciated, is they were targeted effectively in this game. And all that means, it's like, hey, the first combination's going to that guy. Everybody else, like, these are the people you're going to. And they just executed it really well. And were they always perfect? No. But I think that, to me, is, if you want to clean up a run game, really get coached up on the targets. And one of the things about the stuff that Kliff does, and it's great, and it's super effective, when you motion a lot before the run, it makes some of those targets harder, right? It makes some of the, when you're running novel runs and they present a new front, it makes the targets harder. So what I would kind of say is, like, can we find something where the guys feel extremely comfortable and just like, hey, we've run this 1,000 times, we know how to target it, and it's not going to be the best, but at least the floor of the run is going to be a little bit higher. And then we get those 3-4 yard carries like we were earlier in the season. So kind of juxtaposing the two rushing attacks, like, the back was excellent, right? But I think the back's also excellent because he understands where the blocking surface is and who's getting blocked and how he can maximize the run. And so I think that's something I would just kind of keep an eye on: quarterback runs, targets on the runs, and I think that'll raise the efficiency heading into the playoffs.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.